So I'd like to welcome you all to the retreat. It's a beautiful, the weather, Krishna is helping us here, giving us beautiful weather so that we can remember him in a very beautiful way, a very nice way. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my life because what we're going to do today and tomorrow is I have this book of poetry I wrote 15 years ago. And what happened was, after being a devotee for 24 years, I ended up in Vrindavan. And I was alone because my husband had left me, and my son had gone to Gurukul in the ashram. And I was, for the first time in my life, all alone. And then somehow I had friends in Vrindavan, but because there was some kind of tension between devotees in the temple in Vrindavan that time, I lost all my friends, because there was like two sides. So I was on one side, and then I realized that it's not good to be on sides, and so I just gave up all. I just gave up the fight, both sides I had no friends. So then I just took shelter of the holy name. So I had been chanting for 24 years, not so wonderfully. I would finish a round in 5 minutes, so my rounds would take about an hour and 20 minutes, which is pretty fast. And I decided to do a japa reform, my own japa reform. And it was very simple. I just decided to hear each syllable of the holy name chant each syllable correctly or pronounce it very nicely. And just by doing that, somehow or other, and I was praying for service, which is the meaning of the mantra, please engage me in your service, because I didn't know what service I was supposed to do. I had been a pujari for 7 years in Calcutta. I was sent to India, and I'll talk a little bit, I'll give more details tonight. We're going to have another talk about just my life and how I survived in India and in Krishna consciousness for 40 years. But now I'll just give you a brief outline that I was sent to India when I was 24. I was doing pujari service in Calcutta for 7 years, and I was only getting like 4 hours of sleep and doing 20 hours of seva because we were shorthanded. And then the next 7 years I was sent to Bombay, and I was traveling through different states and distributing books, and it was quite interesting because we were the first devotees that the people had seen, most of them in the villages. And so it was quite an experience traveling, and I'll also tell about that tonight. So then after that, I had a child at the age of 39, a very old mother. And all I could do, and I was doing some service in the temple, but somehow externally it appears it wasn't enough. I was doing 5 hours. I had this small baby. I was almost 40. And I was feeding him on the bookstall, but I was doing 5 hours, but they wanted 8 hours. So I had to leave the temple because it wasn't enough service. But actually it was Krishna's complete mercy. Everything that happens is Krishna's mercy. And for me it was good because I had been living in the ashram first 12 years as Brahmacharini, but I was still married, but there was no place for grihasthas in India, so we had to be separate for 12 years. And then in 1982, we started living together. And then I got pregnant. I lost the first one. And then the second one I had, the boy came in Bombay. And so it was quite a relief not to be in the ashram. I was outside in Goa, a beautiful, beautiful place. It's right on the ocean. And so I could get my health back at the same time, take care of my baby. And I had my own morning program with my deities where I was in Goa. And so for 5 years I lived there on the beach with my child. And then after 4 years on the beach, then my husband left. And so then I was a little bit, for the first 3 months I was thinking, oh, why did this happen to me? And after 3 months I said, wait a minute, this is pretty good. Because he was supporting us. He was supporting us. And I was living very nicely on the beach and everything. But then I got the call to go to Vrindavan. Yeah. Krishna, you have to hear the call when it comes. And so If you look at your life externally, you'll say, oh, how unfortunate. But actually, every single thing that happened to me was Krishna's mercy. And if he hadn't left me, I would still be there on the beach of Goa, you know, doing nothing, or just taking care of my son and my own spiritual life. But this way, I went to Vrindavan, and then I got the service of preaching and teaching. So when I went to Vrindavan, I didn't know what service I was going to do. And the first year, I just homeschooled my son. But then he went to the Gurukul when he was 7. And so then I was completely alone. And I decided, okay, I'll just take shelter of the holy name and the books. Because my nature is to read. When I was a child, from the age of 7, I remember reading. In the age of 4, I was very frustrated because my parents wouldn't teach me how to read. I said, why don't they teach me? Why don't they teach me? I was so eager to learn to read, and they wouldn't teach me. And then from the age of 7, I was taking books out from the library this much, you know, just reading every week this many books. And my goal was to read the whole library. But I didn't. But before that happened, I got Prabhupada's books. So that was it. And that was enough to satisfy my mind. So 1994, I was in Vrindavan alone. I took shelter of the holy name. And I was praying for service. And during this time of trying to hear very distinctly the holy name and chant very distinctly the holy name, then actually it's like you're making a telephone call to Krishna in the spiritual world. And the call went through. And Krishna answered. And I was confronted with Krishna, and I was amazed somehow. I mean, not that I saw him, but I could feel his presence and I could hear him. When you chant very, very nicely, then Krishna speaks to you through the holy name. And so I was hearing him. And so I wrote down everything that was happening to me. In 3 months, I was like that. I can't sleep. Maybe you need to sit in the shade. Is the sun too much for you?
Yeah.
Why don't you move over here? Yeah, I think we're going to need shade here. You like the sun? Okay, you're a sun worshiper.
I can get my hat.
Okay, you want to be in the sun?
Yeah,
the
I don't mind the body, I don't mind, but the face, I think it's a bit big.
Yeah, okay. So, you're okay? And you're okay. All right, so we'll have to be in a shady place this morning. We can even just move back, maybe. Shady. Right. So I'm in Vrindavan. I'm taking shelter of the holy name. And then okay. And so I wrote this book. Most of the poetry in here, and it's full of pictures too, is about the transformation I was going through when I was chanting the holy name. And now some of it is chapters entitled Vrindavan and Separation from Krishna are actually from the retreats that we had in Govardhan by Sachinanda Swami. I would take notes in poetry form, and so those are notes from the retreats. And then the Mayapur one, and also some of that is from the retreat, but the Mayapur one was my experiences in Mayapur with Ganga, because I'm very madly in love with Ganga. I love Ganga, and I just go there and swim, and that's my health clinic. I go there in Garpurnima time, and used to be for the whole summer, 3-4 months, but now I'm out preaching instead. So it's out traveling the world. Instead of Mayapur, I'm 5 months out. In Vrindavan, I'm 5 months out traveling. 1 month in Mayapur, 1 or 2 months. So, so I was chanting, and then one day while I was chanting, it was like, yeah, I think we're going to have in the shade our samsar this morning, because the sun is intense. One size fits all. There you go. Oh, I've got to bring my camera. This is really... And someone can wear the tall one too.
Everybody's
Wow, you're prepared, aren't you? Okay, so I was in. Okay, so I'll pass you all these books out, and then you can bring them back when we start. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
And then you can bring them back when we start after breakfast. So I'm going to read the... I'll just tell you the contents and show you the pictures. The first one is Garden of Devotion, and that's the title of the book also. That's the first poem, and that was... about the heart. There's a garden in the heart where your devotional creeper is growing, and how you have to water it to take care of this garden. And watch out for mad elephants, which are offenses to the devotees. Then the next one is relationships with Krishna. And that's actually the first one I wrote was Krishna, are you there? It was just kind of like my son when I went on Facebook. Somebody put me on and I didn't know how to use it. And he knew I was technologically incompetent, so so I wrote, first I wanted, because I'm very attached to my son, right? You know, that's how mothers are. And so the first thing I wanted to find out what he was doing, because we don't, you know, it's hard to communicate. He's in America and I'm in India or traveling around the world. So then I wasn't in India. I was in the same country, actually, as him at that point, America. We were both in America, but still that doesn't mean anything. So, so I looked him up on the Facebook, and he said, Mom, is that you? Did someone help you? So I said, yeah, it's me. And then now I know where he is all the time, because he always writes his commentaries on where he is and what he's doing. And the last one was a picture of his bruised arm because he has a motorbike, you know. Just what a mother doesn't want to see, you know. I mean, for his profile. Anyway, so what happened to me when I was chanting was like that. While I was chanting, I sensed the presence of Krishna. And I was just like, you know, it's quite amazing that I never expected it to be like that, you know. I never expected I would actually have a relationship with Krishna. And then, the first thing I wrote was, Krishna, are you there? Because I wasn't quite sure, you know, is it my mind or, you know, what's happening here, you know. This is actually, and then I realized, wow, you know, because my whole life I've been kind of an impersonalist, sort of. As far as relationships go, because I'm a scholar, and it was me and the books, you know, and relationships weren't so important to me in my life. If you ever met anybody who was a scholar and she was married to a scientist, and it's just like your whole life is somewhere in another world. It's not this world so much, but you're just in your books. And I was kind of, even as a devotee, I was like that, and I was thinking, oh my God, there's, you know, and the ultimate relationship is with Krishna. This is amazing. And I was so, one of my worst fears was relationships, you know, and here I'm in this movement that's all based on relationships. Oh my God, I didn't realize it after 24 years, because I was doing deity worship. That's okay, you know, you can just be with the deities. And, you know, you don't have to worry about everybody else. And if you're on book distribution, of course you relate with the people, but you just give them the book. It's not like you have to be their intimate friends, you know, so much. And then with my child, of course, that was a relationship. But it was kind of different relationship, mother and child. So then when you're faced with the ultimate relationship, what do you think? This is the ultimate male, and this is the ultimate person. And I have a relationship, and here he is. And what am I supposed to do now? You know, and it was just kind of very overwhelming for me to have that realization. So then I wrote this first one. Krishna, are you there? Where are you, Krishna? Are you a person who actually loves me? Because in this world I was experiencing rejection, and, you know, my husband had left me, and then, you know, my son has gone to the Gurukul, and I wasn't sure that there was love, you know. I had lost my faith in love in this world, pretty much. And so then, you know, it's hard to think there is somebody out there who really loves you, you know, and it's the most wonderful person, a person, Krishna. I'm afraid to look inside myself. Maybe there's nothing there, only emptiness and aloneness, and that's exactly what was there most of the time, and especially at that point, because because I had never lived alone. I was the oldest of eight children. And so I was never alone in my life. I never slept alone. And it was like for the first time I was alone. And so my heart was like that. But when I chant your name, then you are there, here with me. I ask you what you want of me. Okay, so then, and I, you know, the relationship's going on while I'm chanting. And I had this mood, okay, here's Krishna and here's me, so I should ask. I didn't think to ask him, tell him what I want. I thought, I should ask him what he wants, you know, because that's our whole movement, is to please him and to serve him. So then, because I was very much in the books, and I remembered Bhagavad Gita, the ultimate instruction from Krishna. You say, manmana, give me your mind. So, Bhava Mad Bhakto, become my devotee. This is chapter 18, verse 66, which is the most important, no, sorry, verse 65, the most important verse of Bhagavad Gita, 65 and 66 in chapter 18. Give me your worship, Madjaji, give me your worship. Mam Namaskaru, give me your obeisances. Mamekam Sharanam Raja, give me your full surrender. You tell me, I want you. Why don't you accept me? Why don't you accept my love? So here, you're faced with Krishna, and he wants to love you, but, you know, I'm just like, no, love? Relationship? Oh, my God. It's like, I want to run the other way, actually. So, oh, you need a book, too.
I have to have Lakshmi, so I just...
Oh, you have to help. Okay, you shared. Okay. But I'm so unfortunate. I've built so many walls between us. Sometimes I feel so proud. So that's a wall, when you're proud and you think, I can do everything, I don't need Krishna. Then he doesn't need you. I mean, of course, he wants us. But at the same time, he's independent. He's very independent. And he can be happy with, he has millions and billions and trillions of devotees. But he still wants us. Even though he has so many, he's always expanding. And his desires are always expanding. So he also wants us to be there with him to enjoy. He wants to always expand. He's not limited, Krishna. So he says, so sometimes I feel so proud. So if I don't need him, then he's just kind of, okay. If that's what you want, then all right. You don't have to see me. You don't have to feel me. I go my way, you go yours in this world. Of course, he still stays with us, even though we have that feeling. You think you could bring my water from my room? Yes, I think I need to drink some water. Okay, so sometimes I feel so proud. Sometimes I feel so unworthy. I feel that no one, not even Krishna, loves me. So then sometimes you just get depressed and you think, wow, you know. Especially when you get old. You go through a midlife crisis and then you think, and then your son leaves home, your husband left, not to take sannyas, but to enjoy the world. Or he may leave to take sannyas. And then you're alone and you think, oh my God, no one loves me. I'm just an old lady, you know, who cares about me? You feel like that kind of when you get older and all your kids leave home before you have an identity. I'm the mother of all these kids and I have to take care of the house and all that. I never had that identity, but still, I had the identity of mother, but I never had a house. But now I do. I mean, when my son was born, as soon as my son is born, he had that karma. And I started living in houses, not my own, but, you know, at least decent houses. Otherwise, I was on the floor for 18 years in the ladies' ashram and the grihastha ashram, too. It was no different, except we had our own room. And before, I was sharing with 3-4 girls, and then ladies' ashram. But then when I was 5 months pregnant, I had to get a bed because I couldn't get up off the floor. I was like 38, and after 5 months, I couldn't get off the floor. It was too much, you know. So we found a broken bed with 3 legs and put some bricks under it, and that was my bed. It was kind of like that, only the boards were uneven. Somebody had thrown it out. That was my first bed since I was a devotee. Now it's different. But and I'll tell you more about those times tonight. So sometimes I feel... So these are the walls that we... and put between us and Krishna, that pride and also inferiority complex. That's also a wall too. That I'm so fallen, even Krishna cannot do anything. It's so hopeless. We have to keep that hope that no, it's possible. So I'm a child lost in the darkness crying, Krishna, please pick me up. So that was Lord Chaitanya's prayer as well. Pick me up and place me as an atom of dust at your lotus feet. So that is our hope, that he will pick us up. Of course, it's the spiritual master that comes here to represent Krishna, and he actually picks us up and gives us to Krishna. I am afraid to give myself to Krishna because I will lose something. Yes. Control. We are very attached to controlling our lives. And so we think, oh, if I just let go, then I might lose control. That's very scary. My heart is on fire. That is the material world, of course. And your merciful words, Srila Prabhupada, are extinguishing that fire. I feel like breaking those walls and running after Krishna as passionately as I pursue material things. But Krishna is faster than my mind. So you can't, sometimes when you chant, Krishna comes, and you think you can keep him there, but you can't. And then he goes away, and you're faced with your dry chanting again. And so he's faster than your mind. You can't catch him with your mind, only with your love. If you start to love him, then he can stay, and he's attracted. I try to give myself to Krishna, to leave myself open to his love. My heart begins to melt, but I cannot let go, because then I feel too vulnerable and open. How can I face the world like this? So sometimes you lose, and you read all these stories about these devotees in Lord Chaitanya's time, just rolling on the floor and doing all kind of crazy things, you know, and you think, oh, will that happen to me? I better not do this. Sometimes I wonder, is this chanting making me sentimental? Or sahajya? Sahajya means like you're just a pretender and you think you're so advanced. And yeah. Or is it making me crazy? Just plain crazy. I want to please you, Srila Prabhupada, to bring others to you. How do I know if I'm on the right path? So this came up sometimes when I was chanting. I said, this is too much. Am I really... is this how it is? You know? And I said, so how do I know if this is what I'm doing is right, this chanting like this? So then I understood, is my love for this body decreasing? And my love for Krishna increasing? So that's the test, that you will know that you are actually advancing. The sahajyas, they think, okay, I will be in my lila with Krishna. So they imagine it in their mind, and then they practice in this life. So the boys get a whole bunch of girls and have Ras Lila. And so this is sahajya. Or else they may smoke marijuana and then chant Hare Krishna. And say, yes, it's okay, I'm above the rules and regulations. So this is sahajya. But I wasn't doing that, so I knew that, okay, at least that much is okay. But so then I thought, okay, well, how much am I using this body for Krishna, and how much am I using it for material enjoyment? So that was the criteria that I found. And my mind, how much is my mind thinking of Krishna, how much is my mind on material things? So it's the body and the mind. And then the words, three things. How much are they engaged in Krishna? How much are they engaged in this world? This chanting is my heartbeat. If I stop chanting, I will die. So I felt like that. That was like my first introduction to Krishna. This is what I first wrote. My first, like, when I first realized, wow, something's happening here now. And I was crying all the time. Like, it was like constantly. Because it just, for no reason, just... like that. So it's almost time for breakfast. Right. So I think I'll stop here, and I'll ask if you have any questions so far, or about anything about chanting. If you have some questions about chanting the holy name, I'm just telling you my experience, and we will be reading some more from this book. And
I was thinking about this pride.
Yeah, pride.
Pride comes in so many ways, also.
It does.
Mm-hmm. And because we are under illusion most of the time, then pride overcomes us.
Mm-hmm. It's sure we're under the modes still as devotees. There are some modes there of nature, passion. Because it's we're in the hospital and we're trying to get cured, so it's not, the cure doesn't come. For some it may come immediately, but for others it will take longer. Like we're on the path. Everybody's on the path. So therefore, yes, sometimes we may feel these material things. We may be influenced by the modes of nature. So what is your question?
Question is, because we are pride, we also have fear.
Yeah.
So that hangs together. So it's a fearful thing to surrender to something you don't
know. Exactly. That's what I was experiencing here, that it's, as you don't, I don't know Krishna, really. I only know what I heard about him. I heard nice things about him, that he's very merciful, that he's magnanimous, that he's kind. He's so many things. So, but still, there's that fear of, you know, if I surrender to him, is he going to take advantage of me or exploit me like other people in this world? You surrender to people in this world, and they tend to exploit and try to make you work as hard as possible, and then they give you a little money and or whatever. Or even in relationships, it happens that way sometimes, or many times. That there's this. So the question is,
To overcome this fear.
Yeah, how to overcome the fear.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, obviously, the answer to all questions is to chant the holy name. And I found that the most helpful thing for me to overcome fear is to chant. Sometimes I used to get sometimes attacks at nighttime, you know, before I would go to sleep, and just fear for no reason. Just, oh, it's dark. Oh, you know, maybe there's somebody out there going to get me, or, you know, who knows. So that's the time where you have to find something beyond this world, to shelter beyond this world. This world cannot give you shelter. You try so many things for protection. So many means of protection, but they don't give you that shelter. So only the spiritual shelter can protect you from fear. And so therefore, when you have this fear, then you need to... What I do is I do take shelter of the holy name, either Hare Krishna or Sri Krishna Chaitanya or Nrisingadev. I'm very close to Nrisingadev. And my birthday is also close to Nrisingadev, so... And he has helped me, and I even have the experience in dreams when I chant. I'm being attacked, like people are trying to kill me or something. As soon as I chant, or else I'm running away from someone, you know, in my dream, really. But as soon as I remember to chant, finished, I'm saved. I wake up every time. Hare Krishna mantra or Nrisingha mantra, it's very powerful. I was just reading for Bhagavatam, at the end of Bhagavatam, 12th canto. If you fall down, you should say Krishna. Or if you sneeze, you should say Krishna. Whatever you do, you should just say, remember Krishna, because this will really save you when the real thing happens. When you're really, like if you're up in the plane, I'm thinking, oh, I'm up in the plane. Is it, what's going to happen? You know, they're telling us to do this and that if it crashes, you know, before you start the airplane. I think, maybe this time I will crash. I don't usually think like that, but I think sometimes the thought comes, okay. Well, I was thinking, okay, what do I do? I put my giraj around my neck and my beads, and I start chanting. Because I carry them with me on hand luggage. And that's the only thing we have when we leave this world. We can't take any of our things with us. Only our consciousness goes with us. And that will save us. Like if you're an artist, I was just saying goodbye to an artist in Innistrath, Ireland, and she was saying, "Do you have instruction you can give me or something you can say?" I said, "Well, you know, you're an artist. You're making such beautiful pictures. So at the time of death, when your whole life goes in front of you, all your pictures will be there, and they're in your heart. They're all in your heart right now. All the pictures you painted, they're in your heart, and so you'll just see one of those pictures, and you'll go to Krishna." So. Yeah, we'll talk about that more in the also in the next class after breakfast. But fear is due to having the material conception. I'm this body. It's very simple, because there's nothing to fear for the spiritual body. For the soul, there's nothing to fear. It's just for this body and for this mind and for our false ego, which is our prison.
Can I tell a very short story?
Okay, and then we'll have to eat.
Yeah, Prasadam is
it's
ready.
Time?
I say.
Okay.
Shall I wait?
Once you start 10 o'clock, then...
Okay, she's our timekeeper.
Yeah. shall we wait?
You will wait, yeah. Yeah, and we'll have time that anybody can...
Of course, if it's a short thing in connection...
No, it's a short thing about fear, how I... I was having this little garden, and... on my way home, I was
okay,
walking.
Right.
I'm still walking. So, and suddenly I felt this uncertain thing, and I felt unpleasant. And then I was sitting on a bench, and I had my bead bag, and I was chanting. And then a man passed, and he saw me, and he came back, and he came sitting next to me. And he has this kind of appearance that I got fearful. I chanted, and he started to talk with me, and I was still chanting. Krishna was so present, I've never felt him, because that fear was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he was chanting, and I was telling him a few things, because I could feel there's something wrong with him. And I just kept chanting, and I was chanting loudly so he could hear it. And Krishna kept coming and coming and coming.
Yeah.
And he left.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful.
Bhagwa told me she does Harinam sometimes alone in Belfast, which is kind of a war-torn city. And even now there's a lot of tension there between Catholics and Protestants. It's political. And so... But her only problem is drunks. Sometimes she'll be just chanting, and a drunkard will come along. And as soon as she sees him coming, she starts chanting Nishinga mantra. And he comes, she says, and then he just turns the other direction and goes away. And Nishinga mantra is very powerful.
I saw it also working.
Yeah, I was attacked by a ghost. And I was chanting the Nishinga mantra and it wasn't like I was chanting, it's like he came. And I felt like in my body there was a huge fight between the mantra was like, and the ghost was there, and I was just like the observer. But the mantra was coming very strong from my, I don't think I was chanting out loud, I think it was in my mind, because I was on that level at this point, I was not in the gross level. It's like kind of in between. I was awake. I mean, it woke me up, but I wasn't awake. It was like but it was very loudly to me. But it wasn't out loud, and it was like a huge fight inside. And then the ghost left. Okay, time for breakfast. We'll meet at 10 o'clock again. Bye.